Welcome to the Messianic Message. I'm Kimberly Rogers Brown.
All right, well, what I am going to do, there's some principles in this Torah portion that kind of seem like Torah trails, but I'm going to go down those Torah trails with us on just two of those scriptures, even though I'll probably have other comments to make. Let's go to Numbers 26:54, and we will look at the principle of practicality here that the Lord is using, because the Lord here is going to be practical about the inheritance being according to how big the tribe is. And so today, what we're seeing in America is this push for equity. How did that happen? My computer has now locked up. That's great. And I can't do anything about it. So I'm going to reboot, but I will start talking to you while it's rebooting. The Lord is going to give more land to the larger tribes and less land to the smaller tribes. And in the way that things are going in America today, the leftist Democrats might say, well, that is equitable. But we're going to see that equity, the way that man needs it, means it, and equality are not quite the same things. Hang on, my computer is getting rebooted. It just takes it a minute. And I need those notes because my brain gets stuck without them.
Not Kimberly.
yes, Kimberly. Yeah. So we're going to take a look here in a minute as soon as I get everything up and running again. Well, this mic, I don't even have a mouse now. What is going on? Okay, there it comes. We're going to look at how equity and equality are different from the man's justice system or the new social justice system to the way that the Lord does it. So while the Lord is being practical and wanting the tribes with more population to receive more and less population to receive less, we're going to find out that he's going to do some things by lots, in which, you know, he's in control of the lots. We're going to find out that is him actually being in control. He is showing them through the lots that he is the one in control. That's not a random thing that's going to happen when they, get their land lots, that it's going to be any different than what he said. It's the tribes that have more are going to have more land, and the tribes that have less population will have less. And so when I was looking at this, I came upon a comment by some expert online that said that so fair was the lot distribution of land in Israel. Now, this came out of the KMD commentary. That's where I got it. Said that the Greeks and Romans took up the practice of casting lots for the distribution of conquered land. So when they would conquer the land, they would distribute the land by lots. In the U.S., the talk of equity comes around, and the definition of equity, according to the Democrats, is that everyone must end up in the same place, regardless of where they started. Now, in Yahweh's system, you all start out with equalness. There's you know, everybody gets a piece of land for their inheritance at the start. In the end, according to social justice, everyone will have the same amount of money. And those with more money will have it distributed to those with less money. So that's called social justice through redistribution of wealth. And, of course, they say that it's for the purpose of making everything fair. The problem with fairness is that fairness relies on man's subjective definition. Yahweh's distribution of land is about justice and making sure that every individual, every family, and every tribe within Israel has exactly what they need to make their lives happy. In social justice, if someone made a bad decision and lost their portion of land, then other people's land would need to be redistributed from theirs to that person in order for that person who lost his land to now have land. But Yahweh's system is inheritance-based. In his system, if you lost your land and had to sell it, you got it back at the end of 50 years. Or if you had to sell yourself into servanthood to pay a debt that you made and you were not able to repay it, if you had to be a servant to repay that, then you were to be freed every 7 years. And if you found yourself as a servant with no land at the 48th year, you could rest assured that in the seventh year of the seventh Shemitah, you would get your freedom back, and in the following year, you would get your land back. That is Yahweh's justice system. In man's social justice system, however, redistribution must happen frequently and be disrupting to people, making them not happy because they have the idea that everyone has to have everything exactly alike. You know, you can't make more money at your job than the next person. So your wages have to be adjusted downward and theirs has to be adjusted upward. Thus, the killing of the high-paying jobs of the Keystone Pipeline, which is the start of bringing the low-paying Chinese solar and wind jobs to America, for starters, and thus their equity means equal outcome. Yahweh, however, has a different plan. He gives everyone equal resources by making sure each person has enough land by making the lots come out according to the size of the tribe, which is in his control, not man's. Equal distribution, though, does not equal outcome. So Yahweh set it up this way so that every individual would have opportunity to show him what is in his heart. Why do I say that? Matthew 25:14, the parable of the talents. For the kingdom of heaven is as a man traveling into a far country who called his own servants and delivered to them his goods. And to one he gave 5 talents, and another 2, and to another 1. To every man according to his several ability, and straightway took his journey. So we have the distribution of talents, resources, according to who has more ability and who has less ability. Nonetheless, this is equal because it's compensation for your ability, much the same way that the lots compensated each tribe for their population, greater population and less population. What the Lord is looking for, though, is for the people to show them what's in their heart by doing what they're supposed to do, which we find in Matthew 25:16. Then he who had received the 5 talents went and traded with the same and made them other 5 talents. And he that had received 2, he also gained another 2. But he that had received 1 went and digged in the earth and hid his Lord's money. After a long time, the Lord of those servants came and reckoned with them. And so he that had received 5 talents came and brought another 5 talents, saying, Lord, you delivered to me 5 talents, and behold, I have gained beside them 5 talents more. And his Lord said to him, well done, you good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord. And he that had received 2 talents came and said, Lord, you delivered to me 2 talents, and behold, I have gained 2 other talents beside them. His Lord said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of the Lord. Now, so far, you're going to see that the tribes that got the lesser land inheritance, lesser-sized land, because of the lesser population, they have the same opportunity with those resources that are given them to enter into the kingdom. You see, this servant that had the lesser talents given to him, he had the same exact equal opportunity to use those to get into the kingdom. Getting into the kingdom doesn't depend on how much you've been given. Getting into the kingdom depends on what you do with what you are given. But now we come to the third one who had received the 1 talent. He said, Lord, I knew that you're a hard man, reaping where you have not sown. Oh my goodness, what an accusation that is. You reap where you haven't even sown. You're a thief. Wow. And gathering where you have not strawed. And he said, I was afraid and went and hid your talent in the earth, and there you have what? Here you have what is yours, that he where he hid it in the earth. This is an evil, wicked servant. The Lord answered and said to him, you wicked and slothful servant, you knew that I reap where I sow not, and gather where I have not strawed. You ought therefore to have put my money to the exchangers, and then at my coming I would have received my own with usury. So the Lord here is saying, you know, I'm going to agree with you that I'm a thief, you know, because the Lord, you know, he sowed all of his servants, the house of Israel and the house of Judah, all of the Israelites into the earth. And that's all of his, that's why all the earth is his. It was his before that even happened, but they can go out there and they're sown as seed. And this servant is insulting the Lord, Yahweh, for that. But anyway, he says to them, therefore, you ought to have put your my money to the exchangers. At least you should have done something with it. So take for therefore the talent from him and give it to him that has 10 talents. For unto every one that has shall be given. And he shall have abundance, but from him that has not shall be taken away, even that which he has. And cast the unprofitable servant into outer darkness. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. So in Yahweh's kingdom, everyone is given different amounts of talents and resources, but everyone is judged according to performance. The judgment of the person with 2 talents is not judged for not gaining 5 talents. And the person with 5 talents does not have some of his 5 talents removed to help the one whose performance was worthless to the kingdom. This is Yahweh's equality. He doesn't do what the Democrats and the communists of the world are wanting to do. Each person who uses his talents to further the cause of Yeshua's kingdom is judged as successful. It has nothing to do with profits and percentages. Money means nothing in the kingdom. Getting to the kingdom means everything. And both the 5-talent person and the 2-talent person enters in because they used their, what appears to the world to be, unequal resources for the kingdom. But you see how that becomes equality, because that becomes to each of them 100%. They both got into the kingdom. That is a full complement, whether they started with 5 or with 2. But the one who wasted his talent loses by 100%. Getting into the kingdom, therefore, is an all or nothing proposition. So we here at the end of days should be glad for this parable, Matthew 20, verse 1. For the kingdom of heaven is like unto a man that is a householder, which went out early in the morning to hire laborers into his vineyard. And when he had agreed with the laborers for pennies, for a penny a day, he sent them to his vineyard. And he went out, and about the third hour, he saw others standing idle in the marketplace, and said to them, go you also to the vineyard, and whatsoever is right, I will give you. And they went their way. Again, he went out about the sixth and ninth hour and did likewise. And about the 11th hour, he went out and found some others standing idle and said to them, why are you standing here all the day idle? And they said to him, because no man has hired us. And he said, well, go to the vineyard, and whatsoever is right, that's what you will receive. So when evening was come, the Lord of the vineyard said to his steward, call the laborers and give them their hire, beginning from the last to the first. And when they came that were hired about the 11th hour, they received every man a penny. And when the first came, they supposed that they should have received more. And they likewise received every man a penny. And when they had received it, they murmured against the goodman of the house, saying, these last have wrought just for 1 hour. And you have made them equal to us, which have borne the burden and heat of the day. But he answered one of them and said, friend, I do you no wrong. Did you not agree with me for a penny? Take what is yours and go your way. I will give unto this last, even as unto you. Is it not lawful for me to do what I will with my own? Is your eye evil because I am good? So the last shall be first, and the first last, for many be called, but few chosen. Now, there's a lot in there, but that penny represents Yahweh's kingdom. If you came in first, you're going to get your penny, which is getting into the kingdom. If you came in last, like us here at the end of days, we're going to get into the kingdom. There is nothing more that we can inherit than the kingdom. So this is also kind of a time-oriented parable, and there's a lot more to that parable. But I want to ask, do you know what the evil eye idiom, it's an ancient Israelite idiom, means? Well, it means to be envious, even covetous and jealous over what others appear to have. So this speaks also to today's communist social justice. Yahweh said that if everyone has equal opportunity, that is just. Equal opportunity to do what? Everybody gets the same opportunity to enter the kingdom. That's what this is all about. The tribes with the larger land, with the more population, and with the lesser land, with the lesser population, they all have the same opportunity to be Israelites obeying the Lord and later entering the kingdom. That's the only thing we're working for. We're not working for any toward any other goal. It's all about getting into the kingdom, you see? So now I want to move on. Well, I want to make this last comment about the first and last. Because I saw something when I was studying this. And this is going to be probably a little controversial to say this. But anyway, Israel will be the last nation to be established on the earth. Now, wait a minute. Israel was established as a nation about 3,500 years ago, right? And there have been nations before Israel, and there have been nations after Israel. So why do I say Israel will be the last nation to be established on the earth? It's because when Yeshua died on the cross, Israel died, and it was reestablished as a nation, a corporate body when he arose, but he was not done populating his Israelite nation with those who would build his kingdom over the next 2,000 years, by using whatever amount of talents and resources he provided them. And so Israel, the nation, has been scattered all over the earth until today. So Israel is not established on the earth, and we're waiting on it to be established again. But when it gets to be established, it will be the last nation to be established. And then after that, Israel will have authority over all of the nations. Everyone will enter the kingdom who use whatever talents he or she has to build the kingdom. So that is the 100% aspect. So it's 100% you get in the kingdom if you build the kingdom, and 100% you don't. If you do nothing to build the kingdom, you don't get in. Rewards are another thing that's different. Rewards will be given in the kingdom and will create a hierarchy of greatest and least that will be based on our loyalty to the law and to our citizenship. And that's found in Matthew 5, verses 17 to 20, but that's for another teaching. And then very quickly, I want to go to Numbers 26, 57, because that verse says that the Levites were not, well, in verse 56, it said that, you know, the tribes got their possessions, but the Levites, we know, did not get inheritance of a land, a territory. So we're going to go down a little Torah trail with this for just a few minutes. The priests were always encamped close to the tabernacle, and then later they were given the spot to live in Jerusalem. The priests also received 48 cities in all, scattered throughout the tribes where they lived so that they could raise flocks and herds. But they needed to be with the people to teach them Yahweh's ways. They failed to do this, which all of the prophets mention often. Yahweh had said that his word was not far from the people in heaven or under the sea where they couldn't hear it. It was with them. And when was it with them? On every Shabbat, or it was supposed to have been with them on every Shabbat. He said this in Deuteronomy chapter 30, verses 11 to 14. But the Levites did not do a good job of shepherding. Now, we're studying with Yaakov, the book of Jeremiah, and we're going through the Kings right now, but all of the prophets have something to say about the bad shepherding of the Levites. The bad Levites were to, well, all the Levites, not the bad ones, all the Levites were to feed Yahweh's flock from his food, from the Torah, not the food of man or other gods, you see. The Levites were guilty of that. They were guilty of feeding the Levites their food. We have it down to us now in the form of the Talmud, the Kabbalah, the Zohar, the Gemara, all the things that the Jews write. That is all come out of the Levites doing their food of man. And, of course, they partook of the worship of other gods as well. So they were not feeding Yahweh's flock, and that is what made the people go astray. And in fact, in Ezekiel 44, it says that much. It says because they led the people astray into idolatry. It's because the Levites did not have the zealousness of Pinchas that Israel went astray. Now, throughout Israel's history, there were other shepherds from other tribes, you know, other leaders from other tribes. All the tribes were given the responsibility of leadership in Israel through being judges. You had judges throughout Israel in everything, and they were from whatever tribe they were in that territory. And in this Torah portion, Joshua will become Israel's shepherd after Moses in the next chapter. However, it was the shepherds of Levi, particularly of the Aaronites, who were supposed to oversee the other shepherds, the leaders of Israel, and ultimately the exile of all Israel, all 12 tribes, comes down to the Levites failing in their jobs. So the Levites, according to 2 Chronicles 11:4, abandoned their pasture lands and property, moved down to Jerusalem and into the territory of Judah, because Jeroboam and his sons had rejected them as priests of the Lord. That's, you know, that's a good, great way for the chronicler to blame Jeroboam for what happened. But wait a minute. What was the duty of the Levites in the case of Jeroboam? Well, first, they were supposed to understand what Yahweh was doing. And then second, they should have confronted Jeroboam. But none of them had the seal of Phinehas. They were not zealous for the Lord. So they simply abandoned their posts. Now, abandoning your post is a wicked thing in Yahweh's mind. For instance, the watchers in the book of Enoch abandoned their posts, and they then proceeded to help mankind get into all kinds of wickedness. Well, the Levites followed that pattern. They were given posts throughout all the land, 48 cities, six of which were cities of refuge. And what did the Levites do? Well, they abandoned their posts when life got a little bit tough for them. They couldn't, go ahead and just say, hey, wait a minute, Jeroboam. Now, they did that, you know, there was one of the priests orchestrated the killing of, I think it was Athaliah. But, at some point, some of them do get some guts and some intestinal fortitude. But for the most part, the Levites have been, I'm just going to say it outright, gutless wonders. Because they would not uphold Yahweh's law with the Israelites. And so the pattern that the watchers set in abandoning their posts, the Levites just picked that up, and then the pattern continued. Ezekiel 34's shepherds, you know, the ones in that chapter from the beginning to the end of the chapter, who eat their flocks, is speaking about the Levites and the other subordinate shepherds who were now scattered with Ezekiel in Babylon. Because Ezekiel prophesied from Babylon. And in Babylon, the shepherds take worse advantage of the sheep than they did even in Israel. We see that today with the way that Jewish and Christian organizations, they have people. I'll tell you this story. When I went to the Tabernacle in Branson, Missouri, we had a woman there who became subject to Phil Rich from the International House of Prophets up in Kansas City.
Boom.
And Phil Rich had come into Branson. He was at the Glory Barn. And at the Glory Barn, people were getting slain in the spirit. And I told those people, I said, the ones that were leaving the Tabernacle on Friday night and throughout the week, going over there, I said, everywhere that I read that being slain, it's never a good thing. And being slain in the spirit is never mentioned together in the scripture. Yeah, there's no being slain in the spirit. This is a dominionist, evangelical, wicked doctrine that came into the church, was being slain in the spirit. No, that does not happen. So anyway, this woman, and she had a limp because she had a bad hip. We were friends, and I felt so bad. She told me that. She said, I gave Bill Rich my whole Social Security check this month so that my hip would be healed. Now, I'm going to tell you that I got kicked out of the Tabernacle for what I did about that, because I got before the Lord and I started praying. Because I was seeing stuff happening in the Tabernacle that should not have been happening. There were people doing sword dances. You know what a sword dance is, don't you?
Yes.
Yes, everybody.
That's Baal worship.
Not only Baal worship, but it's a dance to demonstrate the destruction of your enemies, how you're going to kill them with the sword. But we had people doing all kinds of bizarre things now in the tabernacle after Phil Rich shows up. So I get on my knees before the Lord. And he said, I want you to go over there and confront him and tell him he's a false prophet. And I'm like, I was pounding my ears. Wait a minute, did I hear you right? I've got to go confront. I have to be like Elijah and go confront this man. Well, I wrote one of my very first articles, Who is a False Prophet? It was just like 2 pages long. And before I went over there, I wanted to make sure that I was doing the right thing. And so I gathered about 10 people that were concerned, like me, what was going on. One of them was the rabbi's very close friend. And he had said to this rabbi, this is horrible what you're allowing to come in here. You should be telling people they are not to go over there because it's destroying the congregation here in the tabernacle. This stuff is creeping in here, this wickedness. And the rabbi said to his friend, he said, shut up and don't worry about it. So we all got together and I said, okay, this is what I believe that I've heard from the Lord. But I am not going to go and confront somebody by myself. If I can't have witnesses, I'm not going to go. Because the Lord said you need 2 or more witnesses for everything. So we prayed all week long. We came back together the next Erev Shabbat, and we had our little meeting. And after the service was over, and to a person, they all said, we're sure that that is what Yahweh wants you to do. He wants you to go and put an end to this. Well, you know, I was the tabernacle's associate praise and worship leader. And when, you know, the rabbi was gone, I was, you know, leading the congregation. And, I had some responsibility in that congregation. But nonetheless, I went over to see Phil Rich at Glory Barn. So a bunch of us walked in, and we sat in the back, and he was still slaying people in the spirit. And he got done doing all his slaying, and a bunch of people left, and the people from the tabernacle that had been up there getting slain in the spirit, why, you know, they turned around, and they saw us, and they were like, oh, yay, you've come to join us. And like, no, I didn't come to join you. So I let the place empty out a little bit. And then me and 2 other people went forward, and I took a copy of that article, and I gave it to Phil Rich. Actually, before I gave it to him, I said, Phil, and the pastor and his wife of Glory Barn were there. And I said, Phil, do you teach people that they need to keep the Torah? And he said, well, Jesus did away with all that. And I said, Phil Rich, you are a false prophet. And I handed him the little article that I had written, and I turned around to leave. And he said, then you don't know the Messiah. And I just turned around and I said, no, sir, it is you who doesn't know the Messiah. And we left. Well, it's about a 40-minute drive back to my house, and as I was getting up in my driveway, my cell phone was ringing, and it was the rabbi on the other end of the phone. And I was being yelled at and told that I was destroying his reputation in the community and that I could no longer be the praise and worship leader. And, you know, I couldn't do this and I couldn't do that. And if I wanted to still come, I could just sit on the pew and be silent. But there, I was going to have no participation in the tabernacle. And he said, and I demand that you apologize to the pastor and his wife and Phil Rich. And I said, there is no way I am going to apologize for speaking the truth. And that is how my career got launched. Because I went and confronted a false prophet. But See, that's the kind of zeal that I'm talking about that the Levites did not have. They did not want to uphold Yahweh's law. And in Ezekiel 34, they were eating up the sheep even worse than they did when they were still in Israel. Now, the principles of Ezekiel 34 remain for all of the shepherds that Yahweh calls, whether you're from the tribe of Levi or some other tribe, because you know, he always uses people to do his work. But Ezekiel says that Yahweh will call his sheep back to him because they were scattered by the actions of the Levite shepherds. And so we see this in Zechariah 11 also. Zechariah prophesying from Babylon and blaming the wicked Levite shepherds for the exile. Well, now we could blame it on the wicked kings of Israel. You know, we could say, well, that happened because of the wicked kings of Israel in the north and in the south. No, no. You see, how it was supposed to work is the priests were supposed to do what Nathan did when he went to see King David and said, hey, you're off track here. We don't have records of Levite high priests going to see their king and saying, hey, wait a minute, you're leading the people of Israel astray, and this has got to stop. No, they were afraid for their lives. They got afraid for their lives when King Saul sent that Edomite over to the tabernacle, and he slew all of the priests that were serving in the tabernacle. You see? So they all became afraid for their own lives. And they didn't want to subject themselves to ridicule or to even death. But Numbers 27:21 tells us that the kings, we're going to see this is Joshua. Joshua, it says, was to go to the priest for advice to the Urim and the Thummim. And so the kings were to be subjected to the priests. So the priesthood is the reason why Israel fell. It's ultimately upon them. And again, Ezekiel 44 bears that in mind. It says the priests led them astray. It doesn't say the kings led them astray. Okay, that's all my comments on those two verses. We can talk about anything else now, and I will have some other comments probably as we go along.
This has been Kimberly Rogers Brown from TheMessianicMessage.com. Thank you for listening.